Hello and welcome to The Media Show. I'm Brenda Power, and in this edition, the Irish Times set to introduce an online paywall by the end of the year.
You have to do something that's relevant to your audience, relevant to your readers, and something that they will want to pay for.
The BBC's new boss, Tony Hall. Why David Putnam thinks he's the right man for the job.
Tony will be a leader. He will want to work with the staff. He will not be an autocrat.
And behind the scenes at music station 4FM.
In many respects, it's our listeners that drive the programme. They drive it in the direction that they want the conversation to go.
But first,
a report crossed on Twitter a short time ago using the AP's account, the Associated Press, suggesting there had been an explosion or two at the White House and the president was injured. It was not true, but the markets fell about 150 points for the Dow Jones Industrials in just seconds.
That was Bloomberg there reporting the cyber terrorism hacking of the AP, the Associated Press, Twitter account, and its dramatic impact on the stock exchange. In the wake of the Boston bombings and the subsequent manhunt, there's been a debate over the flow of false information. While the internet and social media gives us all the ability to get information out globally at high speed, that works as much for hoax news as for the truth. Media analyst Gavin Titley of Maynooth University joins me now. So Gavin, what exactly happened and who's behind this?
The Associated Press official Twitter feed, so their main account, tweeted that there had been two explosions in the White House and Barack Obama had been injured. Nobody took responsibility for this immediately, but it's emerged today that a group that called themselves the Syrian Electronic Army, nobody really knows what kind of entity this might be. It might be a very loose network. It might be one person behind their computer terminal somewhere, but they identify, or they're publicly identified, as pro-Assad hackers. That's what they call themselves. They're previously have done a range of attacks on universities, on media outlets, including, I think, one that made the global headlines, which was hacking of the BBC Weather Twitter account, which was mainly done humorously. And they basically said SEA, the Syrian Electronic Army, were here.
But Gavin, this was corrected pretty much immediately. So why did it have that impact?
The reactions to this in the aftermath of Boston, when everyone was still very jumpy about domestic or international terrorism or violence, meant that there was reactions to it. Very, very, very kind of quick reactions to it. But there's a number of things I think about the story which are significant, is that it's only very recently, it's only in the last month, that the Trading Standards Board in the US has allowed social media sites to be used for company and for promoting company information. So in other words, Twitter was not allowed on the trading floor until about last month, because the direct messaging properties in Twitter would allow potentially for conflicts of interest when it came to insider trading. So this hack came at a moment, if you like, when not just was the market actors adapting to these flows, but one of the suspicions is that a reason for the huge losses and the huge panic so quickly in relation to this tweet was it was actually programs were being used which were scanning the news, and traders were using programs which would allow them to divest what they would see as risky stock if there was a natural disaster or if there was a political disaster. So what this shows us is that we're not just talking about instantaneous, fast, highly volatile media systems. We're also, when you integrate that with a market system, where the kind of volatility, the kind of trading algorithms, the kind of information flow that we've seen over the last few years as being very central to spectacular banking collapses. When you integrate social media flow, fast media flow into that context, then you feel like you double the trouble at one level.
So Gavin, this is a bit of a wake-up call, isn't it? We're always being advised about online security, about changing our passwords, not using default passwords. AP is no different from the rest of us, is it?
One of the extraordinary aspects of this is that the main AP Twitter account has the same level of security as your account or my account. And apparently one of the ways that they got access to it was by simply phishing for, first of all, for the emails of AP employees, and then a classic phishing scam where they tried to get the password out of them. The kind of thing that turns up in people's emails, you know, 10, 20 times a day. And Twitter itself announced today that it was bringing forward a kind of a double lock security. So there would not just be a password, there would be another step, which has apparently been in the pipeline for a while, but for obvious reasons is now going to be brought forward, or at least the promotion of it is going to be brought forward. But I think, again, many of these things, sometimes we overemphasize the newness when the oldness of certain things, particularly when it comes to journalistic practices, when it comes to thinking about sources, when it comes to taking a deep breath and looking at something before retweeting it, before transferring it onto another platform, before assuming that it's true. So I think one of the things we can see, both in relation to Boston, in relation to this story and many others, is that a lot of what would be assumed to be the tried and tested journalistic practices around making sure that you're okay, in this instance, the source was hacked, but having a look at other sources, making sure that it's verified before it goes out there. But of course, trying to resist the competition, the intense competition that exists in a real-time news environment, to be, if not first, then to be part of the story, and to be seen to be part of the story. That's a real political economic imperative that's going to be very, very hard to overcome. So there's a lot of discussion about the idea of the need for slow news, a slow news movement, in the same way as we have a slow food movement, which rejects fast food. We reject fast-paced news and put an emphasis on building brands and building trust with readerships and with news communities that are based on getting it right, if not getting it out there first.
Gavin Titley there. Now on Monday, the IBI, the Independent Broadcasters in Ireland, will gather for their AGM, and the focus is media futures and the changing landscape for media. It's been a tough 5 years for broadcasting in Ireland, with the double hit of an entrenched recession and the shift of advertising money online, largely to players like Google and Facebook. Now while radio audiences remain very high, the financial story is challenging for our 34 independent radio stations. We asked the IBI chairman, John Purcell, for a health report on the commercial radio sector.
Many people have been reporting that last year was flat, but many people have said that flat and unchanged is the new growth, you know. So we're in a great period of challenge and change and difficulty. However, radio has got many aspects, more than just spot advertising. There's promotion, there's interaction and all of that sort of stuff. And those represent commercial opportunities as well. And there's a good appetite among clients for creative promotions that engage with the audience, something that radio is very good at. So that area is quite healthy, but it is challenging and there's no point saying otherwise. But the radio sector is resilient. In many ways, people have said that radio is a medium that is uniquely suited for difficult times like this. And I think that's been reflected. So it's tough, but we're continuing to exist. And that's good in this day and age.
That was John Purcell there. Well, one of the newest players on the scene is multi-city music station 4FM, which came on air in the depths of a recession in 2009 and now has a weekly audience of 160,000. Lisa Essiman from The Media Show spent a day with 4FM to find out how it's doing.
We're unique on the Irish media landscape in that we're a multi-city radio station. So we sit somewhere between local and regional radio and national radio. We're on air in Dublin and the commuter belt, also in Cork, Limerick, Galway and County Clare. I'm Sean Ashmore, Chief Executive of Classic Hits 4FM. Well, the target audience for the radio station is a 45 plus, and I suppose in reality the station tends to appeal to anybody over the age of 35. It is primarily aimed at people who are interested in a music-driven station, although we do have speech programmes, and that's very much, you know, the offering. So the music mix on the station tends to be something like about 85% of the music is over 15 years old.
Now, Robbie Fogarty at work.
Hi, I'm Robbie Fogarty. I'm a presenter on Classic Hits 4FM, but I'm also the head of music. And the show I present is called Robbie Fogarty at Work. Primarily, it's a show for over 35s who like music while they work. As head of music, it's quite a responsibility because really it's the bread and butter of the radio station. My job is to actually program the entire radio station's music over a 24-hour, 7-day period. We research all our songs. All the songs are chosen via what we call a digital music test.
We're still relatively young. We're just on the air just over 4 years. In the first 2 years, the station went through what we probably describe as a turbulent birth. We made a number of changes. That's when I came on board. We kind of made a small shift from 4FM to Classic Hits 4FM. And that's been working very well for us since we introduced that about 2 years ago.
Okay, Marie, 30 seconds, okay?
That Carter's report on her death.
So the gear change, I suppose, from music in the morning to talk from 1 to 3 is pretty significant in the station.
They made a number of recommendations, stuff like blood.
I'm Alex Hatton and I'm the producer of The David Harvey Show. So I come into work for about 9:30 in the morning, and as a team we sit down and we discuss the day's news agenda. Okay, James on line 2, and he wants to discuss the fact that prices haven't changed since Celtic Tiger times. That's line 2.
At the moment. All right, let's talk about rip-off art.
In many respects, it's our listeners that drive the programme. They drive it in the direction that they want the conversation to go in.
Joining us is Pauline. Hello, Pauline.
Hello, David. How are you?
How are you doing? Rip off.
It's probably fair to say Dublin has been our most challenging market. It's very competitive. It's very fragmented. Of course, Dublin is about 50% of the total potential audience for us. So Dublin is important, but it's certainly more challenging and more competitive. And when it comes to programming, all of the music-based programmes, the presenters are the producers. It's a very tight team, a small newsroom, but a full service on air. I think, you know, for anybody in media nowadays, it's about multitasking.
Thanks for being with us today. Back tomorrow, 1 to 3.
Lisa Essiman reporting, and we'll be at that IBI conference next week. Well, RTE's had a rough time of it recently, but it hasn't all been plain sailing for the BBC over the past 6 months either. First, there were the Jimmy Savile revelations, then the row over Newsnight and Lord McAlpine, and a director general who had to fall on his sword just 6 weeks into the job. The new DG, Tony Hall, has just moved into the corner office earlier this month. He's an ex-BBC newsman who's been running the Royal Opera for over a decade. But as Anna Carraher, former BBC Northern Ireland controller, reminded me, he started his career, like many reporters, in Belfast.
Well, I've known him for a very long time because we both worked in the news division. He was, in fact, a trainee in Belfast, although at the time I was a producer in London. And when he became director of news, he was actually my boss, and a very fair and a good boss too.
And given the editorial problems that the BBC is facing, Anna, do you reckon he's got what it takes?
First of all, you've got to remember the Director General is the Editor-in-Chief, and a lot of the failings over the last few years, and when Director Generals have gone, it has been over editorial failings. Tony's got a very, very firm, good editorial track record and background, and I think he will give a real sense of leadership to the organisation and a real certainty of judgment to it, which is what really matters. He's not a particularly flamboyant person, but he is a man of great integrity. He's got a huge track record, both journalistically but also through the Opera House. He is good with people. He's a decent man. I think he's absolutely the right person to stabilise an organisation which has been through a very traumatic few months.
Well, when I met up with David Putnam recently, he shared his memories of Tony Hall. He knows him from the House of Lords, where they both sit. And, of course, they worked together in Channel 4. I asked him if Tony was the right man for the challenges that the BBC is facing.
I worked with him for 6 years at Channel 4, which was a pleasure on the board. He's someone, I actually introduced him into the House of Lords, so that was a very nice occasion. He's a good man. They've got the right person, I believe, at the right time. I'm very, very sorry for what happened to George Entwistle, also is a decent man, probably the wrong person, but a decent man. Tony's BBC, I think, will be interesting because Tony was able to look at the pros and cons of the Burt years. He was able to look at the pros and cons of Greg Dyke's years. And I think he absolutely understood that Greg's empathy with the staff and the way in which Greg was seen by the staff was an enormous asset. Already looking at the things he said, it's quite clear to me that Tony will be a leader. He will want to work with the staff. He will not be an autocrat. I think it's going to be a very good thing. He's also an incredibly sensible guy. I mean, one of the reasons I think he and I worked together very well, and you should ask him, at Channel 4 was, you know, I can shoot from the hip sometimes and stupidly. But I was sometimes able to get away with that with Tony because Tony would be a moderating force. Equally, every now and then Tony felt very strongly about something and would say to me, go on, give it a go. And I could go in. And I thought we were a pretty good yin and yang, actually, at Channel 4. In fact, I know we were. So I'm very confident that he's got a good team around him. He's managed to get James Purnell as director of strategy, and he was a very brilliant man. It also allows him to have two really strong runners for the next director general after him in Tim Davey, who did a good job, and Purnell, and that's always healthy. So you've got a triad at the top who are strong, who I think like each other, who trust each other, and I think I absolutely agree with Tony. I think the best is yet ahead for the BBC.
David Putnam there.
This is the story of why. Well, then every story is the story of why.
The story of why there, the ad campaign designed to reposition one of the country's oldest newspapers, the Irish Times, in the digital age. In the boom years, the Times was to the forefront of multimedia expansion, buying into myhome.ie, into the aforementioned 4FM, and even now there's strong speculation that the Irish Times is about to acquire the Sunday Business Post. Liam Kavanagh, you are managing director of the Irish Times. Now, we were talking to Gavin Titley earlier about the slow news concept, if you like, getting it right, getting behind the news, rather than getting it first. Is that where you see the Irish Times' role?
Newspapers were traditionally about looking back. You bought your printed newspaper to see what was in the news yesterday. Now, people will have got that. They'll have got that on Twitter. They'll have got that during the day. They'll have got that on radio. The newspaper now is more about looking at the insight, what's going on, what's behind those stories, what's the opinion, what are people saying, providing more depth, analysis, courage and so on that people can't really get online.
So, Liam, if that's the case, is print dead?
No, I think print will be here for the long term. I still see a long-term future for print. I think people still love their newspaper. You know, there are about 600,000 newspapers sold on a daily basis in Ireland, around 900,000 sold at the weekend. The Irish Times sells more newspapers every day than might fill Croke Park twice a year. So we have a significant audience, a very loyal audience, a very committed audience. And I think that audience will be with us for the longer term. We do find that people also consume digitally and are coming in and out of news sites on a daily basis. So we will be developing and deepening and broadening our news content. And so providing a full service to the readers, not just in print, but also online. The most recent development has been the new content management systems that we have put in place. That is allowing us to have an entirely integrated print and digital newsroom, which is allowing us much, much more flexibility than we would have had previously. So we are now in a position where we can have a digital first news policy. Journalists have much more control over what they do on an hourly basis. And it's significantly changing the type of structures across people, processes and so on across the entire newspaper. And we will really become now more a news organisation as opposed to a newspaper group. So it's a significantly exciting time. It's really the start rather than the end. We see it as something from which we will build from here, particularly on irishtimes.com. So you've seen from the Irish Times in the last few weeks the launch of our daily news blog, where people can dip in and out of the news on a continuing basis during the course of their day. That's new, it's different, and it's the Irish Times. It gives us a new personality and a new slant for people in terms of consuming their digital content. But you're also likely to see some opportunities emerge for the Irish Times in terms of video, maybe some audio content and that kind of thing. And that is going to offer for advertisers and for readers different opportunities. So in the short term, that does put us in the situation where we're investing in the business and in the content management systems that we have. At the moment, you'd be challenged to see the return on that in terms of revenue, because there is growth in terms of digital revenue, but that would appear to be coming mostly in terms of search and mostly in terms of Facebook. But we do see some long-term benefit from that, and we do see that shifting and moving over a period of time. Not necessarily this year or next, but in the longer term, we think it'll come.
So, Liam, that quest for digital revenue means you're going to have to introduce a paywall, aren't you?
So, paywall is on the agenda, and I'd like to see that in place towards the end of this year. We've done a lot of work. We've done a lot of analysis of what has been done in other markets. We're probably down to a range of 4 to 5 types of model, and we're now beginning to bottom out on where we might go on that.
So, Liam, what kind of paywall are we going to see as readers?
Well, we haven't decided yet, but we are looking at a number of options, and there are probably 4 in mind. There's the hard paywall type approach that people will talk about. So as you come onto the site, you would be asked to register and perhaps pay. The second option that people talk a lot about is the metered option, where people will come in and they will consume a number of articles for free and then might be charged for that. Then there's a talk of a club or membership type approach, where people would be offered services in addition to their news content. And we would charge them a membership fee to be part of an Irish Times environment. Or lastly, that there'll be some sort of hybrid model across those different 4. I'd add a 5th myself, and that perhaps we're not ready yet for a full paywall option, but people consuming Irish Times content, we do have to find ways in which people might pay for that.
It's a very small market though, Liam, and people are going to be reluctant to pay for content, aren't they?
Yes, that is true. And the Irish market is very small, and it's a very open market in relation to the amount of free news that is available in the market. But that really means you have to do something different. You have to do something that's relevant to your audience, relevant to your readers, and something that they will want to pay for. And the Irish Times does provide a slightly different and unique news type of content. And that's what we're looking at the moment, exploring the elements of that that perhaps people might pay for and want to pay for.
So, Liam, is the Irish Times becoming digital first?
Well, yeah, I mean, we have been, and we have been primarily a print-focused news organisation. So I talk inside about this 90-10 strategy where 90% of our focus was really on print, 10% on digital. We now really need to become a more balanced organisation between print and digital going forward. So a heavy focus in trying to maintain and retain the best of what we have in print, but also develop and expand our digital operations. And so we keep as much as we can from the values and from the ethos that's there in print, but bring that into the new digital environment.
So, Liam, with the situation at the Examiner and the sale of the Sunday Business Post, have there been opportunities for you?
Well, there has been a business opportunity for us in terms of printing. We were approached by the investors who are buying the titles to provide for them printing services, which we're now doing, and we're very happy to do that. I think it's good to see the titles still in the market, and we hope that they're there for the longer term. In terms of the Sunday Business Post, I can't really talk about that. But again, I'd love to see that title staying in the market. It has a very good pedigree and we would like to see it staying in the market. I think it'd be good for the media market generally.
I know that also you've got involved with the NNI in some debate over the concept of paying for links. What's your policy on that?
Our policy is that if people are using Irish Times content or any newspaper content for that matter for commercial gain, that they should pay for that. And the issue of linking was a narrow enough point in relation to that. I think we have resolved that issue with the people involved. But I suppose you go back to the basic point, the copyright legislation is not clear on that issue at the moment. There is a copyright review due out soon, and we would like to see that underpinning newspapers' right to charge people a licence fee if people are reusing or repurposing newspaper-generated content.
William, Matt Dempsey of the NNI spoke to us about the concerns over the amount of revenue that RTE is taking out of the market with its presence online. Do you see them as friend or foe?
Well, RTE, as an Irish-owned media group, face very similar pressures and issues as the Irish Times would face, perhaps on a slightly bigger scale. They have a falling revenue base. They have a very high cost base. They need advertising revenues to recover or to get more licence fee to be able to continue to provide all the services that they do provide. At some stage in that mix, the government have to decide how to allocate that out. They compete with a lot of other free news content, such as the BBC, for example. They also compete very strongly with the likes of Sky, who have an awful lot of resources that go behind what they do. So a lot of sympathy for RTE, and as an Irish-owned newspaper organisation, we do face very similar pressures. They have a position in relation to growing their digital content, which I understand why they would do that. From our point of view, we couldn't have afforded to put the resources into it that they have. And so from that point of view, we've a slightly unlevel playing field. But as I say, over a period of time, we're going to have to ask ourselves across the Irish media market, what kind of Irish media do we want? And if you want the likes of an Irish Times to be there in the longer term, people are going to have to pay for that content. It's unlikely to come from advertising revenue streams digitally, because the revenue really base for that isn't sufficient to pay for originated content in an Irish context.
A couple of weeks ago here on the media show, Liam, Matt Dempsey of the NNI said he thinks that newspapers should get a cut of the new broadcasting charge. What do you think?
I'm not too sure if the NNI have said that specifically, but a new funding model will need to emerge for RTE. The idea that we still have a TV licence is a bit archaic, and we're going to have to come at some new funding model for that. The government will need to think about how Irish media is likely to develop and grow and maintain itself in the longer term. And in that debate, discussion and so on, they'll need to think about where newspapers fit and where news organisations like the Irish Times fit.
Liam Kavanagh, MD of the Irish Times. Now, while youth website spunout.ie had its ups and downs recently with that controversy over its famous threesomes article, in our Media Watch column this week, Marie Duffy, editor of Spun Out, takes on what she sees as the media stereotyping of young people.
This week, a politician in Mayo made headlines after he proposed a ban on the wearing of hoodies to reduce antisocial behaviour in Castlebar. This is just one of the stories in the news this week, stereotyping young people in a negative way. If it's not antisocial behaviour, it's rampant sexual activity, widespread binge drinking or bullying online, all of which are extremes often used to label all young people. By focusing on the negative things some young people do, the media misses the great things that others contribute. So what can we do? The first thing we must do is to stop referring to our young people as a lost generation. The media has a major part to play in this. The young people who use Spunnet every day tell us that they are frustrated at the negative language used to describe them. If labels continue to be used, there is the chance that it will be a self-fulfilling prophecy and we'll have an entire generation who feel lost and undervalued. What young people need is support to help them through a period of huge uncertainty. Instead, they are being accused of being scroungers who would rather receive benefits and handouts and depend on others. It's important that the media takes time to report on the positive stories regarding young people and not only the negative. Young people in Ireland are doing incredible things and we need to support them. We need to stop seeing them as a burden and instead see them as our most powerful, untapped resource. Our so-called lost generation are educated, fired up and ready to create change. So let's do all we can to support them.
Marie Duffy from spunout.ie there. And if you want to take part in our Media Watch series, send us an email to themediashow@rte.ie. I'm Brenda Power and you've been listening to The Media Show. Next week, we'll be talking to Brian Fallon of journal.ie and reading books on your mobile phone. Is the bell tolling for paperbacks?
I prefer the print book, but in bed I use the e-reader because it's lighter and it's easier to turn a page.
Don't forget you can listen back to the programme on rte.ie and join the conversation on Twitter, #MediaShow. Talk to you next week.